Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Well, for the third day in a row, we lead this morning with a developing story, too, actually, about civil liberties and the NYPD. We talked earlier in the week about the Puerto Rican Day parade arrests. The police said they were rounding up members of the Latin Kings gang who weren't supposed to march in the parade. And we talked about the Bushwick teenagers' arrests from last month, also controversial, as alleged preventive detention, and the charges that the NYPD was trampling on civil liberties of people who have not committed crimes in either of those cases. And this morning comes a related development. A federal court has reversed its own ruling on the issue of the NYPD videotaping people at public gatherings. We also have a development in the parade story, as organizers of the parade have asked the NYPD for a meeting, even though they didn't want members of the Latin Kings gang marching in the parade. WNYC's Bob Henley is here to talk about the court ruling. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Brian.
And also with us, Manuel Mirabal, president of the National Puerto Rican Coalition, a public policy organization. He ran the New York Puerto Rican Day Parade for 7 years in the 80s and 90s. He was there on Sunday as well. The parade organizers, as I said, have asked the NYPD for a meeting to discuss the parade arrests. Manuel, welcome to WNYC.
Good morning.
And Manuel, you first. The parade organizers acknowledged that they did not want the Latin Kings gang marching in the parade. So why do they want a meeting with the police?
Well, the parade organizers changed their policy on having gangs be given permits to march in the parade because of prior issues of they're not having followed the rules and creating problems for other parade marchers and participants. What the parade didn't expect is that the change in policy and working with the NYPD would result in what appears to be many, many innocent bystanders who were not members of gangs also being arrested in that sweep.
You were quoted in the New York Times, I think it was today, saying you were wearing a piece of yellow clothing, Latin Kings color, at the parade, and you weren't arrested. Why did you mention that?
Well, it was a response to a discussion I was having with the New York Times reporter, who indicated to me that when she was at the arraignment, many people who appeared to not have anything to do with gangs, but were wearing some form of yellow or black were in the group that had been arrested, but that they mostly also had red, white, and blue on, which are the parade colors as well as the U.S. colors. And so I said, well, yeah, I also had a yellow tie on, but I wasn't arrested. And it was basically pointing out that selecting people randomly because of the colors that they were wearing, which are very common colors, isn't the way to do things.
Or maybe that
certainly doesn't provide probable cause.
Well, you know? But maybe that works to the NYPD's defense, because they'll say, no, we were able to make a distinction between people like Manuel Mirabal, who was wearing yellow but clearly wasn't a Latin Kings member, and some people who were indicating that they were.
I don't know that anybody indicated that they were members of the Latin Kings. Certainly I didn't. But the point being that some people were swept up and they appeared not to have had anything to do with the gang.
Bob Henley, let me turn to you. What is this court ruling?
Well, this is, I guess, Judge Haight, a while back, had gotten everyone's attention when he strictly restricted the things that were required with the videotaping that the police could do of protesters and of general activities in the city. And this was all part of the handshoe saga, which is something that was started as a result of concern of protests back in the 70s and 80s. There were a group of plaintiffs that came together and successfully got a consent decree, if you will, put in place that the police department would have to go by certain guidelines. They created a handshoe authority, a three-person panel that the police could go to when they wanted to sort out whether or not they were violating people's constitutional rights by videotaping. And so this litigation is a continuation of that because post 9/11, the judge had expanded or loosened, if you will, the restrictions on the police department out of a concern of the police department about trying to prepare, you know, any kind of a terrorist attack or have better surveillance. And as a result, these plaintiffs went into court and have offered evidence of a demonstration by advocates for the homeless that involved Mayor Bloomberg's address. In that, there was another anti-war demonstration. They said this was a case where there was surveillance, but there was nothing that was illegal, and so that on its face, they had violated the handshoe guidelines. And so the judge, not hearing any kind of counter argument from the city at that point, the city's lawyers did not come forward with anything, any kind of evidence to show that indeed there was anything unlawful going on. The judge entered this ruling. Then very late in the game, I guess, after the judge had weighed in, here comes the city with accounts from the city lawyers and the police department saying, oh, listen, we reviewed the videotape and demonstrators pushed people, civilians who were not involved, into the street and they, you know, violated the penal law. So the judge was in the embarrassing position of saying, well, you know, in a consent thing that goes back and forth, you have to have all the facts have to be agreed to. And because the city had been silent, the judge had no other fact pattern. Now that the city late in the game came back with these facts, he has to say, well, listen, these facts are no longer, they are disputed. And so he had to reverse them.
Yeah. In other words, if the city was able to demonstrate that there was actual unlawful behavior that they were videotaping, then they were allowed to videotape.
Right.
If they were just surveilling the crowd at a public gathering, whether it was a political gathering or any other kind, just to do it, or just in case, or just to see what was going on, then they aren't allowed to do it.
Well, and this is the question, and this is what is also part of the litigation that's going on with the Republican National Convention, with the New York Civil Liberties Union, because in that case, there are people who are saying, looking for relief from the court, because, hey, listen, I was caught up and swept up in an arrest. Doesn't it sound kind of familiar? Because I was a protester. I wasn't back in 2004 when the Republicans in town. And, you know, they many people were fingerprinted. They were detained. They were the department departed from its policy of generally issuing people ROR tickets as opposed to fingerprinting them. In this case, everybody was fingerprinted, and they were processed, and they were held for long periods of time.
ROR tickets are...
Exactly. Released on your own recognizance. Thanks. And one of the things that comes out of this is that the department said, well, listen, we based all of these actions on our intelligence gathering. Post 9/11, we have a very serious intelligence program. And so they opened the door, the city did themselves, because then, rightfully, the NYCLU, being good lawyers, said, well, okay, let's look at that intel program because we want to understand how you know what you know. And that's how these things come together, really, Brian, is how does a police department know what they know? And in the process of gathering information, do they step over the line into what would be considered being unconstitutional? And to the degree to which they're observing protesters or infiltrating groups, are they, in essence, violating people's rights to peaceably assemble and be politically active?
And I guess the question is, in the post 9/11 world, at what point do you choose to observe, or for that matter, choose to arrest? And is that the same point at which the police may have acted before 9/11? And obviously, there's no 9/11 connection with the Puerto Rican Day Parade. But Manuel Mirabal, it seems in a way, the issue of police practices is related. In the case that Bob was just describing, we have the NYPD having to demonstrate that there was actually unlawful activity that they were videotaping. In this case, the question is, was it a sweep, which would be unlawful, or were they rounding up people who were somehow actually breaking the law at the parade, not just for wearing colors, no matter what they signify? And in the district attorney's office in Manhattan yesterday, they came out in defense of the police and said they were preparing over 160 complaints to prove unlawful assembly, things like yelling, screaming, obstructing pedestrian traffic. So does the question for you also come down to whether actual crimes were being committed?
At a parade, there is much yelling and screaming. There is a lawful assembly because people, that's what they do, they gather there. Unfortunately, in the community of people that come to the parade, they often come in large groups. The parade has more than 2.5 million people on the sidelines. You can't help but push yourself through anywhere if you're going. So I don't know how you prove that you were doing something abnormal at this kind of event. Yelling, screaming, pushing, being with the group that you're with, trying to stay with them. I think it's going to be difficult to suggest that if anyone that they arrested didn't do anything overtly that showed that they were posing a danger, that they were doing anything other than being part of a normal situation in this parade. We don't have, you know, the parade, and we don't have a problem with the NYPD, you know, using the term busting somebody because they're doing something wrong. In fact, the parade, I understand, met with the police before the event and in fact said if groups of gangs, as they have done in the past, attempt to break into the march, in other words, go onto the street and become part of the parade, yes, you should pull them out and do what you need to do with them.
Brian?
But apparently all of these people were arrested either on the sidelines or even further away from the parade on Madison Avenue.
Bob, go ahead.
Yeah, one of the things is that the accounts in the press, I mean, I just spoke with the police department. There was, I guess, one individual, an older individual, middle-aged individual, who was arrested, and the Times describes it, according to the police department, as lewdness. In this case, they say there was actually physical sexual contact where the person took a part of their anatomy out and pressed it against an individual. So in a crowd of 2.5 million people, you have issues that can happen because people take opportunity of the police being distracted in the nature of the carnival, if you will. Same thing's true with the St. Patrick's Day Parade or any major event where there's the opportunity for public drunkenness or bad behavior. The question here is developing nuanced policing. And that's a challenge. That's really hard to do.
So here's an example. I guess this comes from the DA's office in support of the police. Deponent observed the defendants and said others displaying hand signals, which deponent knows from deponent's training, I guess the deponent is a cop, and experience to be known gang signs for the Latin Kings. And I think, well, that's very interesting. That's not just wearing a color. That's displaying some kind of signal to another person. On the other hand, can somebody be arrested just for displaying a signal to another person, even if it is a Latin King signal?
I don't think that's in the penal code yet.
Yeah, neither do I. And you know, I've used hand signals a lot in the parade because, you know, the decibel level at the parade is such that you cannot hold a normal conversation with someone that's even 1 foot away. You have to scream at the top of your lungs. So, you know, the bottom line is that the question is, can you arrest somebody for using a hand signal? I don't think so. I think, again, you know, the concern here that the parade has and that we have is that as part of the NYPD's effort to do what they believe they had to do to protect the crowd from people who would do something wrong, that they may have, and it looks like they did, pick up some people that they might not have and they should not have.
So
it got worse because as you just pointed out, there were no RORs given. No desk appearance tickets were given. Every single one of these people, regardless of their age, what they were wearing, what they looked like, who were arrested, were taken down, put in jail, and spent 24 to 36 hours.
So, Bob, we just have a minute left, but in general, the NYPD under Mayor Bloomberg and Police Commissioner Kelly have a very good reputation. But ever since the Republican convention in 2004, there's been this growing set of controversies that all seem somehow related. The convention, Bushwick last month, the parade on Sunday, and this handshoe case surveilling people at other gatherings. Are they all cut from the same political or security cloth ultimately?
I think that you're talking about a threat matrix in that evaluation. For those of us who go about our days because it's been secured by people that all put their life on the line, 9/11 seems a long time ago. To the people that are on the front lines of this, there can be a kind of terrorism fatigue, if you will. I think the question is, how do you create the mechanisms where people can have both their constitutional rights guaranteed and security? I mean, ironically, this debate should be happening in the city council, Brian. Think about it. We've had no discussion by the city council about the question of intelligence gathering. We, on the Patriot Act at the congressional level, like it or not, we've had some debate. We've been too busy talking about naming a street for Sonny Carson.
WNYC's Bob Henley and Manuel Mirabal, president of the National Puerto Rican Coalition. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, we will go live to Moscow to talk to On the Media host, Brooke Gladstone. And she may be able to answer the question, in the battle of the press versus Putin, why do the people prefer Putin? Stay tuned.